So I want to talk about in this session quickly about the language of the spirit, and then we want to pull back the curtain so that we can actually see with the eyes of our spirit, because yesterday we looked at the eyes of our heart and how to hear. So now we're going to look at how to see in the spirit. So language of the spirit, how God communicates with us, how we communicate with him, how the spirit realm communicates. And some people are seers, and then some people have the gift of distinguishing of spirits, and all of us can actually discern through training our senses and develop them so that we can then use that gift that we develop in us, and then we can actually all be seers in one way or another. We can all become seers. You know, some people have a head start because they're almost birthed with it, but actually all of us can become seers by developing our senses and then using that and then operating in it. So God has given us all the capacity to see physically, spiritually, and heavenly, if you like, and we're responsible to develop that capacity. If we don't develop it, we won't use it, and it won't grow. Anything you want to grow, you need to use. And even though you might think, well, how do I use it? You just practice and start, and it will grow and develop. So we're responsible to use the abilities that God's given us to be able to engage him and then outwork that in what he's called us to do. So we all have that capacity to hear his voice. You know, his sheep hear his voice. And we all hear in different ways, but we need to engage in that hearing his voice. But we also can begin to see what he's doing. Now, when I say see what he's doing, don't think it has to be this full-blown Technicolor movie. It doesn't. Perception, which is really what seeing is having the perception of understanding what God is trying to reveal. Not necessarily seeing a vision and not knowing what it means. Because I'd rather have a word that says do this than a vision that I've got to try and find out what it's actually telling me to do. So if you put them two together, great. When God speaks to you in a vision and shows you what to do, great. But the main thing is having the perception to discern what it is that God is revealing so that you can cooperate with him. So we all have physical senses, eyes and ears. Our soul has senses, our consciousness, conscience, imagination, reason are like the ears and voice and eyes of our heart. But our spirit also has senses, eyes, ears, thoughts. So how do we see in the realm of the spirit? You know, how does God communicate to us and how do we hear his voice? Well, we've looked at some of that in the last couple of days. How do we see what God is doing? It's all through frequency, vibration, and resonance. You know, even what we see in the natural realm is still the same. It all uses frequency, vibration, and resonance. And it uses light and sound. So everything we have seen and everything that's unseen is all the same, all energy. Some of it is energy that we can see with our physical eyes, and some of it is energy that we can't. It's all vibrating at various specific frequencies. We just have to learn to tune into those frequencies. So the spiritual realm has a frequency. The known universe has a frequency and vibrates and gives off that frequency. Our bodies, each organ has a frequency. And if it's actually out of sync, then that frequency is low and we're unwell. So we can raise the frequency so that we come back into wholeness and wellness by getting the right frequency. A lot of people were talking about, well, we need to be in tune with the frequency of the planet. We actually don't. We need to be untethered from the frequency of the planet so that we can bring the planet back to its right frequency. Because it's not in right frequency because it's out of sync with heaven. So, well, I'm not going to go down any more rabbit trails. Our DNA has its own song. And literally, you can send your DNA to a university lab and they will play its song. But it's formed in chaos because it comes from the record of your parents. Your spirit has another song contained within the light strand of DNA, your third strand of DNA, which actually brings transformation to the other strands and bring them back into the right song and brings harmony, spirit, soul, and body. Our thoughts and our emotions have frequency. And you know that because you can pick up when other people are feeling sad, angry. You know, it's not just their body language. They're giving off a frequency that's detectable by our bodies. We've often it's involuntary because we've never learned to tune it, but actually most of us can do it. You pick up something, you sense something, sense something's wrong, sense someone's unhappy. So you're picking up a frequency that they're giving off. The key is to understand how to receive and interpret those vibrations so that we actually and tune into them and understand what they are. So resonance brings revelation and transformation when you come into alignment with the right frequency. And God has a frequency, and we've all been called to reflect that frequency in how we live. So, you know, I can't remember that guy's name, Kirby. He talks about the vibes. And when I first heard this guy talk about, he's a guy who teaches quite a lot on frequency and vibration, and he doesn't eat. He's a breatharianism, and he basically just breathes and takes communion, so he doesn't eat at all. And you know, I mean, very interesting guy. But he talks about vibes, and I've listened to him. The first time I was listening, what are you talking about? But actually, he's from, I think, Singapore, that way somewhere, and actually he meant vibes. So we would say vibes. You have these vibes, and I'm like, what? But as soon as different frequency, I had to tune into what he was actually trying to say. But once I tuned into it, it was really interesting because the highest frequency is love. Yeah. Love contains the highest frequency. It vibrates at such a frequency that can bring all the other frequencies into alignment. So that's why love, God is love. And God is light. God is spirit. And love, light, and spirit are very interconnected. In terms of waves and particles, when you understand what light is and how light functions and how its observance brings manifestation. So can't get any more. But so words, color, music all have frequency, and we can tune into those things. So your body is actually designed to be a receiver of data, information both from the physical and the spiritual realm. And it's designed to pick up frequency. Your body is an amplifier of that frequency and vibrations and wavelengths of electromagnetic energy, and your body gives off those frequencies as well. Most people think the brain would give off the most, but the heart gives off the most. And the brain gives off a detectable signal about 12 inches, and I think the heart gives something like 6 to 8 feet or 12 feet or something. Wow. It's a lot more, yeah. So you can pick it up by measuring it. I think Arthur Burke does some great stuff on measuring frequencies and brain stuff, and you know, I love people who actually test it and prove it, you know, and so, but it does happen. Everything is interpreted in the brain as electrical signals transmitted by neurons and synapses, which aren't just in the brain either. So physical sound and light, our soul's thoughts and imagination, spiritual thoughts, revelation, intuition. There are three neurological areas in our bodies that send and receive information. Brain, our conscious thought. Our heart, our subconscious thought. And also our gut, the innermost being thought. And they all communicate. And literally, they actually all have neurons associated with them. Now, our spirit itself is contained within a sort of membrane which goes over the brain and down the spinal column. There's a sac of amniotic fluid or something there. Which is contained within, which doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. There's no blood can touch your spirit, which is designed because your blood contains the record of your genealogy, which was formed in chaos. And so when we begin to take DNA and change our DNA through communion, literally your blood is formed in your marrow. And what it talks about in Hebrews about dividing bone and marrow, actually, your marrow, if you have a marrow transplant, your blood will have different DNA to your cells. So when our marrow starts to be reformed and transformed, it can actually resequence our blood, which then touches the rest of our body. It's independent from our spirit, because our spirit is separated from it, but actually imparts our heart, which then begins to pump that around our body, and our blood can carry that information encoded in it once it's begun to be transformed. So there's a whole process of stuff there which is really interesting once you begin to look into it. So we can all receive information from the physical world. Our own consciousness, the spirit, our self, our eternal self, I like to call it, the unseen realm, the eternal heavenly realm, all give information off in form of frequency and vibration. We just need to tune in. So it is a tuning. It's like, you know, this room has all sorts of signals in it. You can't see most of them because they're not discernible with our natural ears or natural eyes. But actually, if you tuned in and tuned in the radio over there, you'd pick up a radio signal, which you can't see, but it's here. You just have to have the right tuner. So we can practice training our senses to tune into the right frequencies. And that is what we need to do. Practice, practice, practice. And when you practice, you get better at it. You know, to start with, people, I have no idea what to do. Can't do it. I have no idea what you're saying. But actually, if you think about your life, you're doing it all the time. You're just not really consciously doing it. Because you're picking up signals all the time. You're picking up information. You're feeling things. You're sensing things all the time. But you just never learn to focus to actually do it when you want to do it. So sometimes you pick things up, sometimes you don't. But you can focus so that you learn. So practice requires exercise, repetition that produces greater strength, abilities, and skill with use. A friend of mine many years ago decided he wanted to get a six-pack. And he didn't want to go to the gym, so he bought a piece of equipment that put electrical things on your stomach, so he could get a six-pack while he was watching the TV. Guess what? It didn't work. It didn't work. It ended up like all the other exercise equipment that you get, which you don't use, and it ended up in the cupboard because it doesn't work. There is no shortcut to get exercise to produce muscle or anything else. Anything spiritual muscle requires exercise. You have to practice. You have to keep practicing, and you have to keep going with it. That's the only way. So, you know, we know our natural eyes receive information and pass the information from the brain, and we learn to become spatially aware of our physical world because we've learned to interpret what that means in a spatial sense. So we have ability with two eyes to produce distance, which means that we can be aware of where we are. Our ears, same thing. It receives sound waves, which are pressure in the air, which is transmitted by the molecules in the air, and eventually that in our ear vibrates in our eardrum and eventually produces signals that go up the auditory nerve. In the brain, we hear it as language and sounds, you know, because we've learned those sounds to interpret them. Same thing with our mind. Our consciousness is really a series of electrical impulses in our synapse passing between neural pathways that the brain interprets as thoughts. And, you know, you have neural pathways set in belief systems. And that forms by repetition. You know, if something is important, like you do it over and over again, your brain retains the information and forms neural pathways to that information so you can instantly recall it. And think about it, it's like if you drive somewhere once and use sat-nav to get there, you're following the route that someone's telling you. You may use a sat-nav the next time. Usually by the third or fourth time, you know where to go and you don't even have to think about it. You just do it. It's instinctive because it's retained information because it must be important to you because you've done it more than three times. You know, if you don't do things more than three or four times, you tend to forget because your brain says, not interested, not really important, shred it. So that actually can be, some neural pathways can be formed in an instant through trauma, which is why sometimes one thing can happen to someone and affect the whole of their life because it's an instant neural pathway created to that memory and it continually affects them. Or if it's so bad, you can actually bypass the memory altogether and isolate it and dissociate from it. So the body has a way of protecting us sometimes through dissociation from a memory so painful that it would destroy us if it wasn't things. Now, obviously, God wants to restore all those things and bring us into wholeness. And there's a whole lot of neural pathways that need breaking open and a whole lot of new ones that need forming. And all the practice that we do actually forms neural pathways that connects us to that so that they become a pathway of life. You know, I've walked the same path over and over again in my spiritual walk in the realms of heaven, that now I know exactly where everything is and I can just think and go there. To start with, it took me hours to walk it. And I kept walking and walking and going down this route and going to this place. And now, because they're there, it's part of me. No, so there is a way of interpreting those things in our mind, and we interpret thoughts, and we understand. Now there are other thoughts that also can come into our mind, which we interpret. Some of those can be good thoughts coming from God as thoughts in our mind. Some of them can be from the enemy, who tries to put thoughts in our mind, and we have to take captive the thoughts, throw out the ones that don't line up with God, and keep the ones that do. So we need to know God so that we know that they are his thoughts. You know, and some people, well, I have all these voices in my head. Well, okay, well, where do they come from? Us, because we can talk to ourselves. I talk to myself all the time. I get much more sense out of me than anybody else, generally. So, I mean, and I do. I talk out loud to myself because why not? You know, I'm communicating. So I talk. It's quite often I just chat and talk, and, you know, I talk to God sometimes out loud, whatever. You know, now there's a whole load of thoughts. Sometimes the thoughts are in our mind. We need to take them captive and make sure they don't come from the wrong source. Now, but the more you know the right source, it's so much easier to detect the wrong one. It just grates. You know, so I know when the enemy's trying to put something into my mind because it doesn't line up. It creates a bad taste, if you like, or a bad vibe. So the eyes of our heart, our imagination, which we looked at yesterday, really forms directly on the screen in our mind. And the eyes of our spirit is where we see with our spirit, is something that gets translated and interpreted by our brain, which can be visual, but also can be, I describe it as knowing. My spirit knows. And you have to tune into this, because if I'm here doing something in this realm and my spirit is in another realm, you know, quantumly entangled, then that realm can immediately connect with this realm. But it's not in the screen of my imagination, because actually I need to close my eyes to tune into that. And I can't always close my eyes if I'm driving or doing other things. You have to have your eyes open. So you need to be able to know without necessarily it being actually visual, but it can be a description. My spirit describes instantly where it is and what it's doing to me. And that's when I look into the room and see all the angels that were being described and a whole load more, then I'm having a description of them because my eyes are open. I'm not seeing them with my natural eyes, unless they materialized, but I am seeing them. And they are communicating the information that's being given off in the spirit realm. I'm picking up the vibration or the wavelength or the frequency, and I'm tuning into it, and I can describe it to you. Because I've learned how to do that. I practiced to do that. You know, I came across it by accident one day when I was trying to see, you know, and then I tuned into it, and then I learned, oh, I can actually do this. So Hebrews 5:14 again, train, practice, keep going at it. You know, God said, God saw. So there's a strong connection between light and sound. And we need, it's a key to understand how to hear God's voice and see what he's doing in that connection. Now we can be a passive or an active receiver. A passive receiver receives signals without doing anything. But they don't actually do it when they need to. An active receiver chooses to look, to hear, to engage, so that they can see and experience. And we need to be active in as a receiver of information that comes from whatever realm. We need to be active in it and choose to look. So we have to learn how to be an active receiver. So the wavelengths of light and the frequency of light and sound, that sort of nice sort of colored frequency from, you know, red to violet, occupies the tiny little piece in the middle, like this little bit there. All the rest of it, and these are long wavelengths, radio waves, TV waves, up to very, very short wavelengths, up to cosmic rays, and then the frequency is the inverse. These are very, very high frequencies, and these, I think, well, the other way around. the frequencies are huge. You know, 3 × 10²⁰. That's 10 with 22 noughts, who are cosmic rays. And the other end, 3 × 10⁸. So they are a lot less in terms of exponential amount of frequency. And the same goes the other way. So there's a whole wavelength of stuff that we don't pick up with our ears or eyes. And same with sound. You know, the human hears from somewhere around 20 hertz, megahertz upwards. And if you think of bats, they can hear way higher. Dogs, you know, a dog whistle that you blow that you can't hear, but they can, because they hear things at a higher frequency. You know, and there are capacities to be able to hear differently, and we learn how to do that in the realm of the spirit. So ear and eyes have abilities to hear certain sounds, light frequencies. The spirit is capable of discerning wavelengths that are not detectable by anything else. And if you think of those wavelengths of being just the things that we can detect, the spirit realm operates at a higher frequency than all of them. But we can, and our spirit is designed to tune into that frequency. So we can interpret and describe it as we perceive it. So signals are passed to the brain from whatever source so that we can understand and distinguish between the spirits. You know, when the gift of distinguishing of spirits is so you can tell one from another. Is it my spirit? Is it God's spirit? Is it an unclean spirit? So I'm able to discern what spirit it is by what frequency it's vibrating at if I learn how to do it. So I can see and hear and engage with other realms and other dimensions because I can tune into them. Because I'm created to be able to. I'm created spirit. You know, I came out of eternity. I'm a light being. So my spirit is light. So it is able to engage in that realm. So both within our soul and our spirit and in all the external dimensions around us, we can engage. So our whole body actually vibrates at a frequency. Our body is made up of 68% water thereabouts, and I think our brain is about 80% water. Now, why is that important? Well, there's a whole lot of research around water. It's a fascinating subject. And, you had all the sort of stuff where negative things spoken into water or frequency produces crystals that are, you know, not very nice. And those that are nice things produces nice harmonious crystals. You know, so there's memory and there's things in water. I'm not going to go down that now. But water has the capacity to transmit vibration, sound frequencies, 4 times faster than the air. So when we receive something, it gets transmitted in our body really quickly. So our nervous system, which is obviously connected to our spirit and around the whole spinal column and everything else, picks it up. That which is coming from the outside and also that which is coming from the inside. So that is also transmitted quickly. So we receive those vibrational frequencies both within and from without. The ear is continually vibrating and it's sensitive to changes in frequency. It's connected to nearly every other organ of the body via various sort of audio nerves, other than the spleen, which is for some reason. So our body is like a detector and amplifier of frequency. It's designed to pick it up. We've never taught to do it. And most kids can do it instinctively, but that's taught out of them as soon as they go to school. You know, because we teach left brain stuff rather than right brain stuff. Now, some places in some parts of the world who may not have very good motives for doing this actually do take sensitive children at an early age and they begin to train them for nefarious purposes. That's what they do because they detect that they have abilities that they then look to train them to use. But our spirit can become sensitive to what God is saying and seeing what he's doing and what the enemy's doing. Now, I don't particularly like looking into what the enemy's doing. You know, I don't let the enemy come into any of our meetings because you don't have to let him. You know, that's what angels are there for. You know, they may come inside people, but then you can restrict what they do in people. Because you can take authority over it. So I don't tend to see a lot of the demonic realm because I don't want it around me. Thank you very much. I can see it in the atmosphere of the earth when I go and look and see what's going on in the realms. But actually, when I'm around people, you know, I'm not really interested in that realm. I want to see what God's doing. I want to see what the angels are doing. And I want to cooperate with them. But some people do see more in that realm than others. And, you know, some people like seeing that stuff. I'm sort of like, why would I want to look at that? You know, it's dark and not nasty. So this room is filled with signals and sound and light frequencies that can be seen by our natural eyes and ears and that which can. Now, we can tune into it and we need to learn how. Okay, so let me say that last thing there. Yeah. Our brain decodes it. That's what it does. It decodes and interprets all the things that we're in. So we can experience it. And the key is to experience it. You know, that's what the whole point of all these things is. So we can have actual knowledge by experience, not knowledge by intellectual understanding. You know, we can give assent to something intellectually, which doesn't have any effect on our life. Until we experience it, then it begins to transform us. So you can sense and feel the atmosphere. You know, people say things like cut the atmosphere with a knife. You know, we have that phrase in our thing that means it's heavy, you know, and often mostly not a good way. It's like, you know, you've had a row with your wife or your husband and it's like, you know, kids walk in and it's like, well, what's going on? You know, and because they detect something, you know. You know, sometimes you go to a place and you feel cold chill or shivers because there are things contained in the fabric of the space of that place because everything gets stored. Everything I'm saying right now gets stored in the fabric of this building, this room. Everything that's ever gone on in this room is stored within the fabric of this room because it doesn't disappear. Yeah, it gets absorbed. Now, negative things that happen in certain places which are there, and it talks about, you know, the ground crying out or the blood in the ground crying out. That's the same thing. Some certain places contain negative things that have happened and you feel them, you sense them, you get chill. Some places are totally opposite. You go into a place and it's just like peace. Now you can get rid of the stuff that's in the atmosphere or stored in the fabric of a building, you know, by spiritually dealing with it. That's why people go around and anoint their house with oil and do all those sorts of things. But you can, when you understand it, you can actually tune into it and then deliberately speak and remove it from the fabric. Same with light. You know, it's not just sound. Light also, you know, light is reflecting off all of us, you know, and it goes into the room. And there's a record of whatever happens in a place. Okay. Now, most of these things are because our senses are there, but we've never used them, so they're involuntary. We didn't try and pick up the atmosphere, we just did. But we can, therefore, train those senses to deliberately tune in and pick up things. So we have to train to engage those frequencies. How God described it to me was, when I first started to see in that spiritual realm and get the description flowing back, he described it as, I said, well, how do I explain this to somebody who doesn't understand? And he said, look, explain it as spiritual sonar or radar. My spirit is sending out a ping into the room and it's receiving back an echo from what's there. And so it's a spiritual ping and it picks up spiritual frequency and spends back a spiritual echo. So then my body picks up and amplifies that and sends it to my brain via those nerves, and therefore my brain can interpret if you practice doing it. But if your spirit doesn't send out a ping, something has to come and give you a right whack around the face normally to see it, you know, to engage it. But when you choose to engage, because your spirit obviously can go outside of your body and grow bigger to create that atmosphere. When that atmosphere impinges on another atmosphere, you can pick up what's going on. And you can choose to enlarge that atmosphere to the degree that you want to engage. Hence, you can go into an area and look at the whole spiritual atmosphere around the area by enlarging your spirit to engage that realm. From above, don't do it from below. You know, if you do it from below, you're going to be under it, and that's not very pleasant. Do it from above. But you can do it in an area that actually shows you what is the spiritual atmosphere in an area. You know, I did that the other night around this area. And it was like, you know, you can learn how to do it. So send your spirit out to engage and then receive back the information that you get. I mean, someone, William Branham, who was, you know, in the healing revival, could determine people's sickness by touching their hand and getting vibrations and tuned those vibrations so he knew what was wrong with them. So he could see what were low frequencies within that person. And then he would minister to them. So in the whole Hebrew understanding of these things, rather than the Greek, hearing and seeing encompasses all the senses, not just hearing and seeing. So when it talks about hearing and seeing, it doesn't just mean that's limited. So, you know, when our eyes are connected, any sensation can be involved. And you get this a lot with smells. Smells evoke memories really strongly because they link to memory. So you smell something and it takes you back to the event. So there are connections between these sorts of things. So, you know, our ears, our eyes, our tongue, skin, senses, all those things are all able to engage. You know, even when we slow our brain down by closing our eyes, literally alpha brain waves are more connected to the spiritual realm. And when you sleep, you go into deeper sleep, you know, delta wave sleep, other sleeps. They found that you get alpha wave intrusions in the delta waves. You go into deep REM sleep, and then there's another pattern after that. And actually, that's when the spirit is speaking to you. Because the spirit can actually speak to you at night, Holy Spirit, our spirit, and give you cognitive memory in the morning of that, and you come up with good ideas. Because you have what's called an alpha wave intrusion. It breaks in while you're asleep and gives you information that you can retain. Anyway, our eyes are closed. You know, our brain starts to engage with our imagination. When our eyes are open, we're actually thinking and cognitive and trying to figure things out. So the brain goes faster, beta waves. So 1 Corinthians 2:16, for who has known the mind of the Lord that he will instruct him, but we have the mind of Christ. So we are connected to the consciousness of everything. Now, you can go right down the sort of New Age route in this, and well, there's a cosmic consciousness and all that stuff, and not take the personal God. But the reality is there is a cosmic consciousness, and his observance of us is why we're existing. Because if he wasn't observing us, we would cease to exist. Because that, again, is a quantum physics thing. Nothing exists until observation. And God observes. We hope he doesn't blink. But we have access to the omniscient God who's actually in us. If you think about it, God is in us. He's omniscient, omnipresent, and whatever the other one is, omnipotent. And therefore, we've got access to his power and everything and everywhere. So, you know, people talk about time travel and all this stuff, and your mind can time travel. Your spirit can time travel. It can go back into anything where God is. And he is everywhere at all times, outside of time and space, but connected to it all. You have access to everything in it. But most of those abilities have been sort of kept under wraps by, certainly by the Christian community anyway. A few other ones are exploring them. And probably way ahead of a lot of us because we've been restricted and it's like, oh, don't touch that. Don't, bad stuff. Well, yeah, some of the conclusions they draw are wrong. Absolutely. And all the sort of quantum physicists and everything else, when they started looking at quantum things, I think it was Niels Bohr, who was one of the sort of pioneers of quantum physics, said, if it isn't weird, it's not quantum. Because it's weird stuff. You know, like, you can look at a spinning atom, and what you think it's going to spin as will actually affect which way it's spinning. And they tested this by asking various scientists to look at a spinning atom, and before they looked, say what they think it's going to be spinning, and the same thing will be spinning clockwise or anticlockwise, depending on what you think. Because the power of thought has the power of changing things. But again, we've never been taught that, although we know God does that all the time. You know, so we have access to the mind of Christ, which is amazing. And when we understand the power of our consciousness, then it will also become amazing. Because energy and matter and how to transform one to the other is within our power, because we're sons of God. We just have to learn how to do it. So there's a lot more we're going to come in this stuff. Ephesians 1:18, pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened, opened, so that you will know. That's talking about our imagination. So we will know, not intellectually know, but experientially know. And that's why we need to engage to know and experience, and then we have a testimony. You know, you don't have a testimony of someone else's information. You have a testimony of your own personal experience. So the eyes of our heart really needs to be engaged. So we can see things without understanding, and that is really important. So when you have a vision, don't let it stay there. When you see something that you don't understand, don't let it stay there, and don't go to someone asking them to interpret it. Or me, anyway, because I won't anymore. Because what I'll say is, okay, let's go and ask God. Let him tell you what it means. Let him give you understanding. Because vision without understanding doesn't give you anything to work with. Vision with understanding is revelation. So when you get something, ask God to show you what it means. And build the relationship with him in asking him to show you what it means. Because that's why he gives you dreams and visions and things, because he wants you to go back to him and build a relationship by fellowshipping around, what does this mean? That's why Jesus taught in parables. What his disciples do? They went back and said, what did you mean by that? Those that weren't interested or willing to find out, it just passed over them. Those that wanted to know went to him and asked him. And that's why God doesn't always give it direct, because he wants to actually see, are we interested enough to go and find out? And ask him and build the relationship. Then ask the application. What am I supposed to do with this? Yeah, am I supposed to just take note? Am I supposed to then act? Am I supposed to then? What am I authorized to do? Because just because you see something doesn't mean you're automatically authorized to do something about it. You need to be very clear what it is God's saying. And you have this a lot. It's like, well, I see this. Well, what am I going to do? Am I going to talk to the person, or am I just going to pray for them? Am I going to cover them in prayer behind the scenes, or am I supposed to go and open that up and say, oh, I've seen this, you need to be aware of it? Well, you need very clearly to get a mandate for whatever you see, to see what you're supposed to do. And don't assume. You know, don't assume, well, God wouldn't have shown me this if he didn't want me to do anything about it. It's not always as simple as that. No. Anyway, often when we're kids, we're criticized when we're using our imagination. Like, you're just imagining that. Or it's all in your imagination. Or it's a figment of your imagination. As if that's such a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, and kids therefore take that on board, and they see, well, imagination's a bad thing because I keep getting told off for using it. So imaginary friends, which often are the angelic realm, people are, don't do that, that's dangerous. Well, what you need to do when a child has an imaginary friend is talk to them and ask them what it's like.
Yeah.
What do they do? What do they tell you? And then you can help them discern whether something's good or bad, rather than don't do that, it's dangerous. Or you're just making it up. You know, let's encourage our kids to be creative and to engage so that they can not just see them these things when they're little, but actually they go on in their whole life thinking that is so an important thing. Because it's important, and we actually make it feel special to them. So then they will value it, and then they will actually be so different from what we've been.
Come on.
Yeah. So anyway, so active and passive imagination. Active imagination, passive, they're different. Passive is when God puts thoughts and pictures and stuff into our mind and imagination, like a vision or a dream or a picture. And active is when we're in control of it and we choose to use it, like, I want to go through a door, so I picture the door, and then it opens the door for me to walk through. So we can activate it, and then we can step through what we've activated. And that's why God has given it to us, to communicate with us in that way. So 2 Corinthians 4:18, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. So if we're going to fix our eyes on what is unseen, then they can't be our natural eyes. So since what is unseen is temporary, but what is seen is temporary, what is unseen is eternal. So actually, the unseen things, everything that we see came out of the unseen. Because God created it, it says in Hebrews, out of that which was unseen. So it's everything comes out of the spiritual realm. And this realm was once part of the spiritual realm. And is now in time and space until sin is wrapped up, and then it'll be brought back into the spiritual realm. And it's our role to bring it into a place where it's ready to come back into the spiritual realm. Then it will become the center of God's purposes, and the whole galaxy and everything else in the universe will be ruled from the center. Because that's where we should be. A lot of stuff that's going around at the minute, love. That we need to be aware that these things are real. Mm-hmm. So look into that spiritual realm to perceive or see it. You know, we have to look into it. It doesn't just happen. You have to look into it. So Mark 8:18 says, having eyes, do you not see? So Jesus was saying, you've got eyes, but you don't see. So he wasn't obviously talking about them seeing him in the physical realm. He was actually inferring to, you've got eyes, but you're not seeing the right stuff. You know, so we all have natural eyes, but they don't see the unseen realm. We all have spiritual eyes and ears, but often they're not open and functioning. So we need to open them and work on it. So in order to see, we've got to look. That sounds pretty obvious, but it isn't, because we don't often. So we need to look. Daniel 7:2 says, I was looking in my vision. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold. So I wonder if he'd said, behold, if he'd stopped looking after he looked in his vision. Because he kept looking, and that means it brought revelation. And then he was to say, behold, here's what I've seen. Here's what it means. Habakkuk 2, same thing. I stand on my guard post. I station myself on the rampart. I will keep watch to see what he will speak to me. So he was looking to see what God was going to say. And so we need to look. So are we active? Are we passive as a receiver? Let's learn to be active receivers like Daniel, Habakkuk. We have to look deliberately and intentionally. And that's the point. There is an active spirit world all around us, full of angels, demons, the Holy Spirit, the omnipresent Father, the omnipresent Son. They're all around, and they engage us in different ways. But most people are completely unaware of it because they're not looking. They're not looking to see. So there, it's like we have a screen, our imagination, that actually has things projected on it, but actually we can look onto that screen. Now, because of the fact that it's been shut down in most people, it appears to be black. So when you close your eyes, generally it's black, and particularly if there's no lights. You know, and when you go to sleep, that blackness triggers you going to sleep. Because there's nothing to see. It must be time to sleep. So when we close our eyes and there's nothing to see, we don't do anything. So we have to get that. So when we close our eyes, either we activate our imagination to begin to see, or we actually see. And that's what we want to learn how to do. So we fix our eyes and look into the spiritual realm to perceive. We can activate that screen so that we can begin to picture things by meditating around it. The screen is black until it's illuminated, either by actively illuminating it through our imagination or actually opening up that blackness so that we can see through and use it as a portal of vision. Because the actual screen is not really a screen. It's a curtain, if you like, a veil. And the veil is torn. So we can pull the veil back. But most of us, the veil is torn. But like a curtain, like that one, it's actually together. So we have to learn how to undo it. So what if that screen was not black by default? So when we closed our eyes, it wasn't black. It was open. You know, what if it's actually a viewing portal to see into the unseen realms? You know, what if it's a doorway and a portal to step into the unseen realms? How do we access that portal? Well, it becomes really important to find out if you want to engage it. Originally, Adam, being made in the image of God, had the capacity to see and move spiritually. How do we know that? Well, he could see and engage with God in the garden, both in Eden and in his garden, because God walked and he heard and he saw and he talked. He could see and engage with Satan in the garden. Well, Satan is not a physical being. Now, he says, well, he became a snake or, you know, serpent that spoke, but he was able to see that and engage with it. He also had access to see and move in the realm, but that was blocked after the fall. Now, if he had chosen not to go in the bushes and cover up with fig leaves and try and do the humanistic thing of making it all okay by covering it up, and he had embraced the pathway into eternity, then he would have still been able to access that and see. He chose the wrong route. He chose the wrong path. He didn't go through the pathway of the knowledge of the tree of life. He went through the knowledge of tree and good and evil, which was not a good place. So he was excluded from the pathway that engages the unseen realm. That pathway was to the tree of life or the eternal realm. And, of course, there was two cherubim and a fiery sword there. He didn't want to go through the fire. If he'd gone through the fire, he could have accessed that realm, which is where Enoch did. Enoch walked through that realm all the time, and one day he didn't come back. See, people think Enoch walked on the earth with God, and God took him. He did walk with God, but he walked in the realm of the spirit with God. And then he didn't come back. Yeah? Because he had access through the realm, through that pathway. The tree of life was not close to him. And he isn't close to any of us. Now, Jesus has opened it, obviously. Now, when Jesus defeated Satan, he restored our access to that realm. Because the veil of the temple was torn in two. And hence, in the early church, why do you think there was so much angelic involvement? Because the veil was torn. And here is an in and out. Jesus had an open heaven over his life. It says in John 1, angels were going up and down, just like Jacob did at Bethel. Open heaven, house of God. Yeah. Stupidly, he went to live somewhere else.
He didn't have doctrine yet.
Yeah.
He didn't have doctrine yet.
No, he didn't. But he was told by God to stay in Bethel. Yeah. And in fact, Jacob was told by God to live in Bethel, under the open heaven with the angelic presence. And because he was a keeper of flocks, and Bethel is a mountain area, and there was nowhere for his flocks to graze, he chose to go and live at Shechem and then other places, and his family disintegrated as a result of it, because they didn't live under an open heaven where his destiny was. They went to other places, and obviously ended up in Egypt. Now, if he'd stayed in Bethel, none of that would have happened. And just imagine what it would have been like to have lived an open heaven, and what would have happened. You can imagine it, but it didn't happen because he was disobedient. And same for us. Sometimes our destiny is in a place. And if you're not in that place, then you're not going to fulfill your destiny. And people make decisions on where they live based on their money and jobs and various other things. You need to base your where you live on where your destiny is involved. And for some people that can be anywhere. But for some people it's in a place for a season. And if you're not in that season, in that place, you will not fulfill your destiny in fullness. So it's really important to make decisions on where you live based on where your destiny is engaging. Veil of darkness over our eyes has been removed. Paul, John, Stephen, we know, engaged and saw into that realm. Acts 7:55, being full of the Holy Spirit, he gazed intently into heaven and saw the glory of God. Jesus standing at the right hand of God, and he said, behold, I see heavens opened and the Son of Man standing on the right hand of God. That is Stephen on the earth, saying he could see into that realm. Now, we know John did the same thing. You know, his first two chapters of Revelation were all seeing, looking in, till chapter 4, verse 1, where it was like, come up here. And then he went into that realm. But first he was seeing it in a vision of heaven. Then he went into heaven, and then he was experiencing what was there. Matthew 27:51, behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Now, it's impossible for it to have been torn from top to bottom without God doing it, because they wouldn't have been able to reach to do it. And it was sort of, you know, 14 inches thick or something. Now, Hebrews 6:19, this hope we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast, and one which enters within the veil, where Jesus has entered as a forerunner for us. What does a forerunner do? go before. And so he's gone within the veil as a forerunner so we can go. It's open. Having become a high priest forever, so it's forever open according to the order of Melchizedek. So the veil is open, we have to learn to go through it. And then Hebrews 10:19, therefore, brethren, since we have confidence to enter. Well, how many people have got confidence to enter?
Yeah.
No. Not many, but we're learning to have confidence to enter.
Yes.
And where do we enter? The holy place. Holy of Holies. Around the Ark of God. In the tabernacle. By the blood of Jesus. By a new and living way which he has inaugurated for us through the veil. That is his flesh. So literally, the cross is our way of entry. Because it's opened up a way for us to come. Since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with sincere hearts, full of assurance of faith. Well, how many people have got assurance of faith that they can step into heaven? More and more now. But not that many a while ago. But it's becoming more and more common because the revelation has been open. Now we can draw near. You know, and that's what God wants. He wants us to draw near. He wants us to enter and come through the veil. So 2 Corinthians 4:3, even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing. There is a veil that can come over people that stops them seeing. 2 Corinthians 3:16, whenever a person turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. And then immediately it gets put back in a religious veil when we enter a religious system. And then we live under a religious veil that says you can't go in unless you die. Yeah, so the veil gets removed so we can see the light, and then the veil gets put on so the light is dim. So that's why we have to teach people to engage this stuff. This is why we have to demonstrate it and help other people to do it so that they know there's no veil. And we don't put religious veils over them to stop them engaging in intimacy through fear and through religious leaders who don't want their sheep to be able to hear God so that they have to hear them through them and be paid for the privilege. That's what the whole system does. Creates a mediatorial system that's designed to create dependence on a person that is the mediator between them and God. And that's why coverings are so unbiblical. Because if you provide a covering for somebody, you're between them and God. And therefore, you have to go through them to get to God. Or you actually don't go through them to get to God because they don't let you go through them to get to God. They actually tell you what God says or what their interpretation of what God says is so that you can't hear God for yourself. And then you're dependent on them every Sunday to come and for them to tell you what God is saying this week. Rather than he can say everything to you every minute of every day because you have an open heaven over you. So we need to look and engage beyond the veil. Beholding and becoming, we become like that which we look at. So, if we're looking at the right stuff, we will begin to be transformed and changed by it. 2 Corinthians 3:3 says, having manifested that you are a letter of Christ, cared for by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of the human heart. Which is why our hearts need to have their information rewritten and re-encoded by the Spirit. Not the genetic material that has actually created it, which is why transformation is so important. 2 Corinthians 3:13-14 says, and not like Moses, who used to put a veil over his face, for until that very day, the reading of the old covenant, the same veil remains unlifted because it's removed in Christ. So the veil, which was all mediatorial, because you needed a priest to go to God for you in those days, is now removed. So now, and you have a forerunner of this in David, who had the Ark of the Presence of God right in the midst and worshipping 24 hours a day, recording all the things that God said and all the revelation, and the scribes were... it's a fantastic scene with what it should be like for us, because David was out of his own time and saw what it was like to have God in our midst and in our midst. So the veil between the realms has been removed, so we can see and access. Okay, we can't actually do what we can't see, and we can't be what we can't see. So it's really important that we engage so that we can actually come into the fullness of who we are. Hebrews 11:3, by faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible. So the spiritual realm is the thing which actually makes everything else. That's why we need to see it and engage it. Jesus was the express image of God, and he only did what he saw the Father doing, so that we can be made in the image of God and a reflection of him and do what he's doing. And you've got those scriptures there. So the veil is taken away. 2 Corinthians 3:16. Whenever a person turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty, not bondage. So when we turn to the Lord, there should be liberty. But it's become bondage for a lot of people. But we all, with unveiled face, behold, as in a mirror, the glory of the Lord. So when you look in the mirror, what do you see? What do you see reflected back? And you need to look with the eyes of your spirit at what you see that's reflected back, and actually start to see yourself the way God sees you. And those of you who don't like what you see, repent. Because this is the point, we are being transformed into the same image that we see, from glory to glory, just as from the Lord the Spirit. So another version says we're transformed from one degree of glory to another. In other words, more like him all the time. But we have to see that image if we're going to be transformed into it. And if you just look in a mirror, and obviously this can describe the mirror of the word, or it can describe actually looking into the realm of the Spirit, you become what you see, because you're going to see what you really are, because you're going to see the fullness of your spiritual reality that will then transform your physical reality. If you look at it, if you keep looking at yourself in the mirror and not liking it, you're going to stay the same or get worse. So look at it in a different way. Look into the realm of the Spirit and see it as a mirror that reflects back to you how God sees you, and then be transformed into that image, one degree of glory to another, each day. Being changed. Take communion each day. And what you're doing is looking into the mirror of God's image of you, contained within the record of the DNA of God, that actually gives you your image to encode your life. So keep looking. You know? And you can use these things as little triggers. Every time you look in the mirror now, don't just look at your natural image. Choose to engage. I'm going to look at what God's image is of me. And I'm going to focus and behold, and I'm going to become like that. So there's lots of things you can actually do. So the veil is torn, but it's got to be drawn back so that we can engage in that unseen realm from which everything is formed and everything holds together. We have to actually look into it. So we can be transformed here from being there. So what we are in the glory realm of heaven can transform us here when we keep going there. So we become what we engage. So as we live and move and have our being, which it says in him, in Acts 17, I think, the true reality, which we can see, that reality is reflected through the gateway of our lives, and we begin to radiate that around us and change the world. You know, this is not just about us. This is about transforming the whole of creation and bringing it back to its eternal image as manifested sons of God. Sons of God revealed on the earth in their true image, that will carry such a reflection or a radiation of the glory of God that we can literally terraform the planet. So cities of refuge will be terraformed places. They will not look like other places. They will be changed to reflect, like the garden that God gave Adam and Eve was a reflection of Eden, the garden of God, and they were supposed to then take that garden and make the rest of the world, to subdue it, to be like that garden. So the whole earth should have been filled with the garden, just like heaven. And then they were supposed to take that out and transform the moon and all the other planets and everything else. Because it wasn't about the earth, it was about the world. And the world, cosmos, is totally different from the earth. So our responsibility is to the cosmos, to the whole of creation, to make it like heaven. And we think that, you know, our little patch is really important. It is really important, because everything of creation is looking at it, waiting, groaning for us to come into our sonship. And we're usually arguing with each other and falling out, you know. And it's like, because we don't see the bigger picture of who we are as sons of God And the reality of the power of that and the authority that we carry as God's children to bring transformation and change to the whole of the created order, you know, is waiting to be brought into the glory of the freedom of the children of God, us, you know. So let's really start looking at that image and getting transformed. I will make all these slides available to you, by the way, so you don't really need to take notes. So, four realms of the spirit that we can engage and learn to see into. There's the realm of the Holy Spirit that most of us are really familiar with. The Holy Spirit is active around us, and the Holy Spirit can look into someone's life and can give you information about it. We call it words of knowledge and words of wisdom, discerning things. And you can be given that as a gift to use. Now, we're all used to that realm, and that's a sort of baby stuff realm. Then there's the realm of the personal angelic. So we can see angels around people, their spiritual light, fire, aura, that sort of stuff. The realm of the angelic, the spiritual realm around us, and, you know, in this room, there's a lot of that angelic realm going on. And you can look beyond what's around people in their atmosphere to look at what is actually in the realm of the spirit and see the different things. And we'll have some fun engaging with that.
Can I ask you to, you mentioned something yesterday about engaging, like I'm praying for my children who are, some of them are estranged from me, but praying for them, but I can engage their, you were mentioning their angels and go into their, that was very unique.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm not just sending my angels, but actually could engage them. Could you kind of
unpack
that a little bit more?
Yeah. In a sense, when we have access to the realm of the spirit, then we have access to that angelic realm. If that's within your sphere of government, then you can operate in that realm because angels are ministering spirits, guardians of people. And where those people are not in connection with God themselves, then you can interact with their angels and cooperate with things in their life. Because angels are very active in bringing us into salvation because they're ministering spirits on behalf of those who will inherit salvation, inheritors of salvation, those that have already inherited and those who have not yet. So there is to make those connections, bring Christians across people's path. They're involved in engineering all sorts of circumstances in people's lives. And you get that if you think of Abraham, who was sending Eliezer, his servant, out to go back to where he was from, where his family was, to pick up a bride for his son, Isaac. Mm-hmm. Abraham said to the servant, "The Lord will send an angel ahead of you to prepare." And so when he got there, there was all this kerfuffle around the well, which enabled the servant to find exactly the right person. Because the angel went and engineered the circumstances. So, you know, we can cooperate with those angels because we're desiring our children or others to come into their inheritance. And where they're being robbed of their inheritance, we can look to help. And there's a lot of things you can also do when you're on your mountain about what you do into those situations. So, you know, there's a realm, you know, where we can operate and engage, which is not what most people understand.
Do you need a mandate for that? To engage with someone?
You need a mandate if it's not someone in your personal sphere. If it's within your sphere of government, then you're authorized. You know, and family covenant gives you authorization in a lot of those things. But yeah, you definitely need a mandate if it was, you know, somewhere else. But God can give you a mandate to do some of those things if you're open to it. So yeah, that was that. So 2 Kings 6:15-17, Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all round Elisha. And all of those were spiritual beings of the order of the Chaoth. The Chaoth, which is an order of angels, which I'll do in the next session when we do the angelic realm. So that was an order. Those horses were angels, fiery ones. So were the chariots. And so are the whirlwinds that took Elisha up into heaven. And so were the fiery sword, and so were lots of others. So the key is, though, Elisha could see into that realm because he wasn't fearful because all the army was around. And therefore, hey, we've got a bigger army than them. So we don't need to be concerned. His servant couldn't see, but what happened was, I pray, Lord, open his eyes that he may see. So actually, we can pray to have eyes opened. So let's do that now. Are we good? So I'm gonna make this declaration. I declare the veil of blindness removed. I declare the removal of all religious veils and mindsets that hide the truth from us. I declare that you can discover your true reality of the real world. I declare the eyes of your spirit open. I declare that you can see and engage the unseen realms. Okay? So that's a curtain which can be pulled back. Okay? So get it. If you want an image to do the exercise, here's one. Now, there's a hand that's going to pull it back. Okay? And when it's pulled back, you'll start to see what's behind it. Okay? So what I encourage you to do is actually think about that black curtain, because that's the screen. Think about it, the fact that it's not actually a black screen, it's a black veil that is already ripped, torn. And all you have to do is to be able to pull it open. Okay? So close your eyes and you'll see it immediately, okay? Because it's black. So think about that screen. See that black screen? Now what I want you to do is to put your hand in front of your face and open your eyes and look at your hand. Then close your eyes and actually, can you see your hand? Probably not. For those of you who can, awesome. Then open your eyes again and look at your hand. Now look at it intently and get a picture of it. So then close your eyes and now just begin to picture your hand, and in your imagination, see your hand pulling back the screen, pulling back the veil, so that the veil begins to open. Now start to look. Start to see. You may see light. You may see a portal. You may just get a glimpse of color. But start to focus on what you see. So the curtain is open, the veil is open. Start to look. You may begin to perceive the spiritual realm around you. You may actually look into the heavenly realm. You may see the angelic realm and be sensitive to that as a vision or perception. Now, what I encourage you to do is to begin to focus your attention and to think about the spiritual environment around you, around your physical body, and begin to sense or see or perceive or just know what is around you. Now just consciously send out from your spirit just a wave of thought to engage that realm, a ping. Just by faith, just think about sending out your spirit to engage the realm around you. And then just be open for the interpretation of what you're engaging in. If you're seeing it visually, awesome. If it's more of an impression, then focus on the impression to get a description or a knowing of what's in the realm around you. Now, your personal angels are around you in that realm. And I want you just to start sensing and focusing on their presence. And just begin to engage them. You may want to ask them what their names are if you don't already know. Just get that sense of what they're wearing, what their appearance is, what weapons they have. And as you practice doing this regularly, then you'll begin to interact and direct and send and use those angels who are ministering spirits on your behalf to go ahead of you, to prepare the way. So just tune in to that realm. I'm tuning into that realm now, and it's quite an interesting scene. There's a lot of really smiling angels who are really happy that you're beginning to focus on them and engage with them. Now remember, you need to practice. You might not have seen anything or felt an awful lot the first time you do it, but if you go back and you do it again and you reactivate and you do it again, then it will become more clear. You will tune in to how you receive from that realm, because you may receive, like me, information as description. You may see visually. You may get very strong impressions of knowings, and they're all equally valid. Just focus and tune in to engage. And not only can you just see through the veil, you'll also begin to learn to step through the veil and go into what you see when that veil is you're looking into the realm of heaven and looking into the spiritual realms, rather than just the realm that's around you. But it's all done through exactly the same process and procedure.
If you've been blessed by this teaching from Mike Parsons, come and visit us on our website, freedomtrust.org.uk, where you'll find a whole range of resources. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, and on our Sons of Issachar blog. God has given us a mandate to raise up a Joshua generation who will enter into the promises of God and lead others to do the same. Are you part of that Joshua generation? If so, check out our Engaging God program. Join a worldwide community of pioneers. Learn how to access God in the realms of heaven and take up your responsibility as a son in his kingdom. Freedom Apostolic Resources. We're here to help you find and fulfill your destiny.